Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Mile High Five podcast. I'm Doug Cunnington, and today I'm at Camp Fi, Rocky Mountain, week 2.5, in front of a live audience. Today we're going to do a Q&A type episode, and I have a couple special guests that drove down from Longmont. So I have Pete, Mr. Money Mustache. How are you doing today?
I'm the same as I always am on Mile High Five, which is super splendid.
Thank you for making the trip. And Rox Duckles, you are hanging out too. So how's it going with you?
Yeah, good. A little bit better than Pete, at least. So I like socializing more. So.
Welcome to the show. Thanks again for making the trip. So we have a ton of questions. The way we got these is I put a Walmart bag in the corner and a pile of paper, and I think we have like 30 questions. I don't know how we're going to get through them all, but I also have a microphone set up so folks here can ask live questions. If you're watching on YouTube, you'll be able to see them. So if you do ask a question, you know, mention your name, where you're from. And one cool thing with this camp, it was the last one added in the, you know, sequence of all these Rocky Mountain camps. Basically, there are 35 new folks that have never been to camp before. And typically at Rocky Mountain, you end up with like a handful of new people, maybe like 10 or 12, something like that. So this is really cool. And one observation is that we have a couple very young folks, 21, a couple 22-year-olds, even younger people. I'm not sure how old the very young folks are, like 8 or...
6 and 8 this month.
Okay. As I started to guess, it was 6 and 8 years old. I was like, I have no idea how to gauge the age of young children. So outside of my wheelhouse. Okay. With that said, we're going to move quick. And I want to invite Matt to come on up and ask the first question.
All right. Hi, I'm Matt. I'm from the San Francisco Bay Area. My question is, the current reality of America is that wages aren't keeping up with housing and the cost of living for many recent college graduates. And people in my generation are generally feeling pretty squeezed. So for those in their 20s and 30s, what is your best advice for these people to pursue FI despite the economic reality?
It's a tough one. I'll send that to Pete first. It sounds like that.
Yeah, it's good to focus on a raging optimist like myself. So I would say, like, first of all, you mentioned the Bay Area, which is the least affordable housing, like, almost in the world. So you don't have to stay there, first of all. Like, it's super smart. And the United States has a lot of really affordable, even in big cities, there are some places where houses are still like $200,000 and $300,000. And I'm from a different place too, right? Like, I wasn't even born in this country, and I came here seeking better opportunity and a better ratio of, you know, salary to house prices. So moving around is cool. But if you want to stay in a place that's expensive, then just, you got to get resourceful. Like, renting is cheaper than buying there. Roommates are great. Like, I lived with roommates for a lot of my early years, and it was some of the most fun years. And then aside from that, the rest of stuff isn't really more expensive. Like, food and all the real necessities have not gone up faster than inflation, right, or our wages. So just, like, if you can isolate the housing part, then life is pretty, pretty nice still.
Rox, anything to add?
Yeah, I think so many people are putting in so little effort. I feel like that, yeah, it's hard, but I think that, like, I way exceeded how much money I thought I would ever have. And so I wish I could go back and tell myself, like, oh, you can cool it a little. Mm. But yeah, the amount of effort you put in affects it a lot, and I would suspect that it will continue to.
Right.
Yeah, I really don't need to add much, but I mean, if you're here, like, you're probably going to figure it out. So...
I'm just asking in general for my generation.
Yeah. Very good.
Nice.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks.
Yeah. You sound like a hardened capitalist there.
Me? Uh-oh.
Right. We have the next person coming up.
Hi, everyone. I'm Sarah from Nashville. And my question is, how can we amplify the importance of the FI/FIRE movement to attract younger audiences?
Rox, you want to hit this one first?
I feel like this is like one of your favorite subjects, right? Like, spreading fire.
I mean, it is what I try to do, but I'm not sure if it's working for younger people.
Mm. Mm. It needs to be sexier.
Yeah, keep going.
That's it. I have no solutions, just identifying problems.
Yeah. And for me, I very much try to stay in my wheelhouse, and that is middle-aged, former IT. Yeah, unfortunately, it's like exactly what you would expect. But I also know like my lane, and I just try to stay in it. And so that's not very helpful. Do you have like other, what suggestions do you have? Do you have any, what's your answer to your own question?
Well, that's really the something that puts me on the spot.
That's fair. It's okay if you don't have anything. Because I mean, I'm just punting.
Let me see. I would say, I guess people our age, maybe they could start like sharing like the word with like other young people. And then also, I feel like parents, they have really like helped their kids sometimes with like sharing like the word about like the FI movement. Like my mom, she like introduced me to the FI movement, and I think that really helped like her kids a lot.
So. Yeah. Well, and so your mom introduced you to all this stuff, and then have you told some friends about it? Like, how did you like get them excited? Do they care? Have you tried to tell your friends?
Yes, so I have. I would say some of them are very open to it. Some of them, I feel like they aren't really thinking about like finances at like this age in their lives. So I think it just depends.
As Karen is walking up, I will say that they didn't have any questions. I went to their table at dinner, and I very highly encourage them to ask a question. So I'm sorry we didn't have super solid answers for everything, but I appreciate you coming up.
Hi, my name is Karen. I'm from Arizona. And my question is, looking back at your 20s and 30s, what is the absolute best investment you made in yourself that paid off the most financially? So to make it more specific, maybe what is one hard skill, like coding or marketing? And then what is one soft skill, like emotional management or networking, that completely changed your earning potential?
Ooh, earning potential.
That's like a job interview question. These are super tough. Woo. And as normal, Pete, this sounds like a really good one for you.
I mean, I was very job focused, so I did get a degree specifically in the hopes of getting a good job. For me, it was computer engineering, and it did pay off, and it also helped me get to this country from Canada, where I first was born and started working. So like, but that's kind of unique, and it was probably going to change based on the generations, and not everybody's going to be career and money focused. So I think maybe a better answer is, being good at meeting people and making friends is probably worth even more, both in a life satisfaction sense, but also in a money sense, because like people with friends, you're just going to know like, hey, so-and-so is starting a company and they actually want me to work for them because I'm friendly. And some of the people I know that are the most, like, I'd say unfairly wealthy, that's just like, damn it, everything works out for that guy. It's the people who are extremely easy to get along with. And then they just find like, they just get absorbed into these like random jobs that are just too good. And it's like, life is kind of a popularity contest, whether you want it to be or not. So it really helps to be not popular, but to be like friendly and a good friend and a good loyal friend to a lot of people. And then that's like a key to all of life, not just jobs and money.
Yeah, I have a slight tweak on that, which is being funnier. So I feel like that has helped me in my career. Like I was very, like, I think it helped me, you know, with my bosses, and maybe it was just a personality hire. If you want to be a personality hire, I recommend it. And, you know, like AI is not very funny, so it's pretty AI proof. It can help you make friends. And yeah, I feel like that has been helpful to me.
Yeah, thank you.
And I also got a computer engineering degree because it was marketable at the time. But looking back, I really wish I would have done Toastmasters like as soon as possible. I think like the communication skills would have been way more powerful, and coupled with an engineering degree, like that would have been much better than me not being able to communicate. And I worked really hard after I got laid off from my corporate job, I worked hard on communication and like trying to do a better job talking, which I don't know how to land this sentence. I feel like it's going on too long. So. Thank you. All right. So we do have some questions that are written down. But in the meantime, if you have a question here, it might be good to stage and get on in line if there is one. And then we'll come on back to you in a second. So Roxanne has been working really hard on reading out loud. So I asked her to read this because I have a really hard time, especially in front of people.
How did you guys create the fire community in Longmont? What steps would you take to create a new fire community in a new location today? Kind of sounds like they're trying to create competition for you, but how did you create the fire
community? It's impossible. Nobody should try. I think the real answer is creating events and inviting people to them. That's like what it really boils down to, any kind of community. Like even Camp Fi, what we're experiencing right now, Stephen just started creating events and inviting people to them. And surprisingly, like more and more people show up and it gets more and more awesome. So there's a shortage of events and a surplus of people who want people to create things. So whether it's fire or any other kind of community, if you're willing to do that, and you can even just start like with a meetup group on meetup.com or like Facebook, if that's your thing. And in Longmont, it's mostly what happened. In my case, I also created the physical building, and that's been fun to have, but I don't think it was even all that necessary of a part. Like, because even if we didn't have the headquarters building, there would still be a nice community there.
Awesome. My name is Alex. I'm from Colorado Springs. I'm on the cusp of retirement in the next year or two. My wife has informed me that in the next year or two, we will also start a family. So as he who went before and famously raised a child in early retirement, how would you compare your experience to your non-retired counterparts, or did it seem about the same?
So that one's for me specifically, yeah. I assume. It's the best. Like, I totally highly recommend being retired before you have kids, if you have that option, both parents if possible, because it's just way, like, it's really hard. Child raising is harder than any job. So you might as well make it your top priority. And then even if you're making some money in your free time, it's like far second place. And it can just be like during the naps and stuff of your children. Aspire to super daddom. And if you make that your top priority, and it's okay to suck at everything else. That's what I had to tell myself. Like, okay, I'm going to be a crappy blogger or carpenter or all the other things that I like doing for me in exchange for being the best dad that I can be. But then it turns out there's still plenty of free time to do those other things. It's just that I'm not making it my top priority. And that lets me relax and just be like, it's all right. You're playing with your kid in the creek for 3 hours and your other projects are going on pause, and that's your goal. So do it, and definitely no regrets because of that.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
What's the next one on the list?
Yeah, the next one. How do you factor in Social Security? How does it impact your FIRE number?
So, yeah, we factor it in as it's estimated, and yeah, we put it in. We don't assume any, what word am I looking for? They like mark it down like by 75% or something like that. We don't do it. We just accept the estimate. Probably in the long run, it won't really make a huge difference, but we don't discount it. So what do you guys do?
I don't include it.
Okay.
It's funny. That's the last blog article I wrote. I almost feel like this was planted for me, but
yeah.
I always didn't include it because I didn't know much about it, especially because I didn't even come from this country. But as I get older, it's getting closer and closer, right? Like now it's only 7.5 years until I might be eligible. But the real answer is it's actually valuable to you at any age, even if you're 20 and you're planning to retire at 30, there's a pretty like concrete dollar amount you can use to estimate. So anyway, what I did in my blog article is I proposed that you calculate the net present value of this future stream of payments, which you can easily do. There's an online calculator to do it. And then for a 20-year-old, it might be worth only like the equivalent of having $90,000. So you add that to your little FI chart, and it's like whatever you've saved plus 90,000, that's what you're really at. And for me, being closer to early retirement, and I've paid in all these years, the equivalent value right now, even though I can't use the payments now, is in the hundreds of thousands. So to me, it's a pretty significant boost. Even though I don't actually need that money, if I were closer, you know, on the edge and I didn't have extra savings, I'd be really excited that I'm going to get this stream of like $2,000 a month starting in just 10 years. So yeah, it is there. Don't assume the program's going to be canceled, because it's going to lead you to work too long and your life will be less fun because of it. So be an optimist and give it some kind of reasonable estimate And then the real goal of it all is just so you'll retire early and have the confidence to start having fun.
Good answer. And we could link up to your blog post.
Yeah. If you have links as an option, that would be cool.
Did you plant that question yourself?
No, it doesn't look like my handwriting. So.
Okay. Fair enough.
It's very good handwriting.
It is some manly handwriting, though. So I think if we're being a detective, I don't know.
It could have been you. It could. Okay.
No, mine's all right. Not that tidy.
What is the next?
So have you ever regretted making a blog post or podcast episode? Was there an unexpected response that surprised you?
Oh, I'd like to hear Doug's answer to that.
I think, yeah, there's probably been a couple where I'm like, I said some stuff that wasn't quite clear. A lot of people are nodding out there. They're like, oh yeah, I remember that episode. Yeah. But I quickly forget. And if so, I totally forgot and it doesn't matter anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you ever gotten in trouble from the internet?
No.
Okay. I've definitely walked into some bombs, like both deliberately and accidentally, just because I've been writing a long time and I enjoy writing about whatever's in the news, or not in the news because I don't like the news, but whatever's like happening in society, in my opinion. So like the most unexpected responses were stuff related to the COVID era. People were very testy about that. And I was naive because I don't follow like the politics of who is mad about what. Like I just care about, you know, numbers and trying to make sense of the world. So people got mad at me for some of my opinions on that, both on the like left wing and right wing. And then I also have opinions on like the government and politics sometimes. And you know that that gives you lots of, you know, that's always going to bring out lots of fiery comments. And then I feel like if it's possible to walk into it, I've done it. But the internet's a big place. People are going to say mean stuff. They're also going to say nice stuff. Our human nature is to be attuned to the mean stuff. So you actually have to reverse your nature in order to be able to survive the harshness of the internet.
Did you ever edit or remove something based on the poor feedback where you're like, actually I kind of goofed up on that?
Yeah, I think I went back and like, I definitely quite often will go back and try to correct or like make stuff more clear. And because I'm never trying to offend anybody. It's always just trying to share information that I hope is useful. So if I can share the information in a less offensive way, then why not do it that way?
All right. Yeah, what's next?
Do you and your spouse have to be on the same page to get to Phi?
You want to hit this first?
You guys are good. Yeah. As a recent
married
man who's gone through the Phi journey.
Yeah, it is definitely helpful if you're on the same page. My wife and I, Elizabeth, who doesn't listen to the show, so I could basically say whatever I want here. She, like, we have obviously similar values, but like she's a lot more conservative than I am. So when we look at projections, when we look at whatever safe withdrawal rates, some key areas, we kind of had a disagreement. Those compound, but over time, I guess we both kind of met in the middle. Overall, I think it's very helpful if you can figure out the compromise that works. For us, we did realize we had like some communication issues with it. We tended to dig into our own viewpoint. So we perhaps did some work on our own, but we also got a financial advisor. So we have a neutral third party and at least probably two sane parties out of the three. Hopefully I'm one of those sane parties. I'm not sure. It depends on who you ask. But at that point, it's like we have a neutral third party who is operating on another set of ideas and stuff. I think you can run into like major issues and, you know, just some of the conversations that we've had over the weekend. I mean, if you are working full time, you're working 50 hours a week, then all of a sudden you both retire and then you're around each other all the time. Like that could also cause an issue, even if you agree on the financial stuff, because there's interpersonal space that you have to deal with. So yeah, it helps. What do you think, Pete?
I mean, the way the question was phrased is to get to Phi. So the answer is definitely no, yeah. If you're just taking it that way, because surely you can make enough money to get to Phi, even if one person is just being dragged along. But it certainly is more harmonious to be on the same page and like just more fun to not be fighting each other. I find frugal girls to be very hot. And I also kind of find the opposite, you know, of the opposite situation. So it's just, yeah, I think it makes the romance flow a little better.
All right.
I'm so glad that I get to read the questions, because the next one is my favorite one so far. No offense to you other people. Do you know Bob?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Bob Haynes has been my roommate for years at Economy, and it's an inside joke, so the people that get it will get it, and then otherwise it's more difficult to explain. But if you've been at Economy a couple years ago, you know what we're talking about. So I know Bob. He's a good roommate.
Too bad we don't have the water bottle sticker to show how serious this this tradition has become.
Yeah, I was going to say, I have one of the stickers with your face on it, and it's on one of my guitar cases. So, like, that's a very high mark.
Okay, this next one's a little longer. Many indicators point to this being a challenging time to retire. Increasing inflation, overpriced equities. What advice do you have for recent retirees to help weather this period?
Maybe I'm a little naive, but I feel like every few years, like, you could say that. So it's always been volatile and inflation and uncertainty. Like, it seems really intense right now, but like, it's been like this for hundreds, thousands of years. So I think,
not thousands. Yeah. Since there's no stock market back then.
Good point. Fair. Yeah.
Sheep are just not producing this year. There's no wool.
They had their own. It wasn't exactly the stock market, but like, my statement stands.
Yeah, you're totally right. This could apply in many different years, including since the beginning of when I was writing. People would write me questions exactly like this. So you have to keep in the context that every time you say this time it's different, you're usually wrong. So don't get too clever about like, oh, I'm going to outsmart, you know, the stock market. But if in doubt, just accumulate a bit more and plan for a 3% withdrawal rate instead of 4%. And you're never going to get in trouble with a 3% plan. So if you're really that type of person, but I would instead urge you not to do that and just plan to be flexible, because flexibility is like the biggest skill you have as a human. Like, that's the defining thing of our species, is we can adapt to almost anything. So if you have faith in yourself that like, I'm a flexible person, I'm going to be able to adapt even if weird stuff happens in the economy, and I'm going to have fun with it, then you're a lot more likely to enjoy your retirement.
Yeah, this kind of ties back to your question about like it being more difficult for younger generations now. Maybe focusing more on Coast Fi, like just the more flexible, longer term, if Fi really does become more difficult to achieve, focusing on the others. And I believe you guys already are. It seems like your generation's more interested in like time flexibility at work and more freedom for that. How has shaving your head contributed to your Fi journey?
I think, is this one directed at you, Rox?
No. I did shave my head once, but.
Okay. I mean, it was a key role in me being able to retire early. I think, Pete, did you do the math on cutting your own hair at some point?
Yeah.
Like, compounded over decades?
It's tens of thousands of dollars, but not hundreds of thousands. Unless you're a haircut fanatic that goes like to the salon every week, then right. It is hundreds of thousands.
Yeah.
But yeah. So like, if we interpret the question to be cutting hair on your head rather than purely shaving it like Mr. Clean,
right.
then it's contributed somewhat
to
many people's Fi journeys.
And it's pretty good. I don't have to buy shampoo or conditioner. I don't have to dry my hair. People are like, oh, I have to dry my, that's a thing, right? I don't know.
Yes, most people have to dry their hair.
Okay, yeah, it's been decades. I have no clue. So yeah, it's a whole cultural or like a humankind thing I have no idea about. So, but it's great.
But short hair is almost as practical as no hair. So shout out for those of us who just keep it short.
Yeah.
Short and sweet.
You don't have to be as high end as Doug, and you can still enjoy the benefits.
And I will say, yeah, there's no one in here, so I won't even make eye contact because I don't want to direct it anyway. But I have gotten questions in the past, like, hey, I'm kind of losing my hair. I'm thinking of shaving it. Shave it. If you're on the cusp, if you think maybe I'm losing my hair, just shave it. It's a much better look. So I can give that advice. So some people are nodding. A lot of ladies are nodding. I see that. This makes sense. A lot of sense. Okay. All right. Next question.
Do you have a number to define fat fi and chubby fi?
Rox, do you have a...
Not idea? Really, just because I feel like, I mean, they both describe your mama's fi. So.
Very nice. Yeah, Pete, have you... What do you think on this one?
I don't really follow the fat fire movement, and chubby fi, I just learned about this today. I don't know if that's like literal or just a new joke or something.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of anti fat fire as a philosophy, because to me, it's like celebrating wastefulness in one interpretation anyway. You could just say anyone who spends way more than me is like, and anybody could say that. And that's like, you know, super fat fire. But maybe somebody in the audience knows if it's defined at like, is it like $100,000 of spending or $200,000 or?
It's like $5 to $10 million is fat fire, and then like chubby fire is like $2.5 to $5 or something.
Oh, okay.
Because I just learned about chubby fire too, like
there was this. So it was like $2.5 to what?
$2.5 to $5 or something. I thought it was like chubby fire. And $5 to $10 is fat fire.
Okay. So we'll I'll say it so we have it. $2.5 to $5 is chubby.
Don't quote me on this.
And then this is just from the audience. Like we're learning at the same time and maybe making stuff up, starting rumors. I was going to say the videos go straight to AI, so this will be in like search results in days. Like it's all messed up.
Cool.
So and then it was 5 to 10 is fat, and this is just someone yelled from the audience. I have heard like. This was a few years ago, but like over 100K is like fat fi. But the thing is, like, it depends on where you live, and there's so many factors. So, like, to put a specific number doesn't quite make sense.
And I agree. Like, if you have 5 million, like, you're rich. You know, it's like, I mean, you can pretty much do what you want. Right?
And then
you would agree with that, right? It's logical.
Yeah, 5 million, and then if we use a 4% rule, that would be like you'd have a $200,000 spending budget, roughly. So, I mean, that certainly sounds fat fire to me. Especially if you're actually spending that. You know, there's lots of people in our community that have just accumulated that much or more, but they don't spend it. They're just like, I don't know, it's extra money. And so I don't know if that would still be fat fire or not. I should probably brush up on my definitions.
Yeah, there's a lot of new definitions. But just as a counterpoint, because Pete, you were like, you don't dig fat fire. I'm all for it. Like, that's where we leaned into. Hopefully you're not too upset, but yeah, I mean, I think depending on what you're spending money on, it could be more wasteful or less, but we've definitely opted for like the higher end. So there's room for everyone. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Except your mama. Yeah. Okay. What do you recommend for a smooth transition from work to fi?
I think, for me specifically, I was self-employed and I was able to like walk down the number of hours and the responsibilities that I had over time. So it was very natural. Carl, former co-host of the show, he went from 5 days to 4 to 3. So I think as much as possible, I mean, if you're going to quit anyway, like if you could negotiate your hours down, and my wife ended up doing the same thing. So 5 days to 4 to 3, you could expand your hobbies, you have more free time, and you could kind of get used to like letting that old identity go. In a gradual way. I think that's really helpful versus like all of a sudden you're home all the time and you used to work 60 hours a week or something like that. So
same answer. Yeah. I did 4 days a week for my last year of work. And then I realized I really didn't like those 4 days. So I was really ready to quit immediately after that. Whereas I thought I might want to go on with these 4 day work weeks for more than 1 year to like save up more, one more year syndrome, but it kind of just amplified how fun my weekends were once they were 3 days, and I was like, okay, I'm ready for more of this.
Yeah.
I would say I'm the most recently fi of us. I just fi'd in February. And I think having some projects ready to go was helpful to me. I've heard of people doing things like planning a big hike, planning a big trip, starting a small business. So having something to divert the bulk of your like energy into, the energy that you're currently giving to work, whether that's like creative energy or, you know, mental energy, I think has been helpful to me. And yeah, on mine.
I want to challenge you. You don't want to start a new job or a company, right? Did you say that? You were like, oh, they started a business?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's not a good retirement. You don't want to start a business. You need to take a break.
Are you speaking from experience?
The beach, man.
Yeah.
It has to be the beach or it's not retirement.
Yeah. And you can flex your projects up and down too. So you can start with it being a big chunk of your day. And then as you like have your lifestyle grow and the more that you're spending on like cooking or time with family, then you can flex your projects down to where you're just living. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Okay, is there a goal you are really glad you gave up on in your FI journey? Abandonment, quitting.
Think about that.
Are you a quitter?
Yeah, well, I'm trying to think about this, but I am a quitter. I think it's really good to quit stuff. I haven't studied it much, but I really like cognitive biases. There's one called subtraction neglect bias, where basically we tend to add stuff instead of removing it. So if you want to pick up a new hobby, you're like, oh yeah, I'm going to start doing this in addition to everything else that you used to do. You got to drop something. Like, you don't have unlimited bandwidth. So I think, you know, that's an area where it's really good if you can like quit stuff. So come back to me. I'll think about it. Pete, have you quit some stuff where you're like,
I'm not really a goal-oriented person, strangely enough. I'm just like a day-to-day person.
Yeah.
But I have found, because I've been retired for so long, that I have done a bunch of stuff that I would have thought would be nice, which is really great. Like the idea of starting to play music a bit more and like being in our Christmas band, playing the bass and stuff. That was like really important to me. It was unexpected. And also all the other things I've learned, like different trades and skills. You could think of those as goals. So I'm really glad I did them, but it's probably because I didn't have many to begin with that everything I did achieve was a pleasant surprise. So that might not work for everybody, but I'm more of a hippie.
I don't know if this 100% applies, but I'll answer it anyway. So I have been self-employed for the last decade or so. And basically, once we hit our FI number and my wife stopped working, I was like, you know what? I'm not interested in any of this work that I was doing, even though it's like the dream job that I created. And I shut it all down, and it was awesome to shut it down. It turned out I didn't really care about it anyway, which it could be like a personality flaw for some other deeper seated issues. I'm not sure, but I was like, oh yeah, this is great to quit this. And it felt awesome. So yeah. I'm like, yeah, quitting things is a good idea depending on what you have going on. So
what's your favorite color?
Yeah, I like blue a lot. Also red and green. I don't know.
Favorite color?
Oh, yeah. I was going to answer. Silver.
Silver? Why?
Because it's like the future, color of the future.
Oh. Technology.
Science. Robots.
All right, bonus. Oh, purple, maybe.
Yeah, okay.
Can you tell? I do have purple hair for the audience. Not a frugal thing at all. Oh my God, it's so expensive. But I do cut it myself because I'm like, I'm not going to pay extra money to have them cut it. So bonus question, what's your favorite animal?
I like dogs. I am a dog person, so.
I suddenly can't think of a single animal. Oh my God.
I forget.
I don't know any animals. Dog.
Dog
as well.
Eagle.
Good answer.
Eagles are cool.
Okay, in what scenario would AUM, assets under management, make sense for someone on a FI journey?
Okay, I'm going to interpret that to mean paying a financial advisor who bills according to the number of the amount you have invested with them. And I don't know, I guess if it's a really good financial advisor and you don't care about paying a fixed fee like that, whether they work or not. But in a way, like if it's a small enough number, it doesn't really matter. If it's a big enough number, then it's probably a bad idea at all times.
Yeah, similar answer. Like I know a couple people that have AUM advisors and they're fine with it. They understand the trade-off and they're fine with it. They don't want to know some of the details. I have some other friends that have AUM advisors and I don't think they actually understand what they're giving up. And I'm like, I want them to understand, but like it's their family friend and their dad uses. So it's like, I'm not going to try to argue with someone about something like that. And then we have a fee only, advice only advisor. and he's great. He does, like, we actually do the management. So if we want to, we're like, hey, we want to rebalance, like, we agree with this allocation, we actually execute the trades and stuff like that. So that totally works. He actually does do assets under management. So he will do, he'll manage it and do the trades and all that stuff. He doesn't charge 1%. I can't remember what it is, but there's a full range and you potentially could negotiate. So not everyone's doing 1%, and there may be a cap. So it, I'm just making it up, but it could be 0.3% with a max of like 15,000 a year or something like that. And maybe like a graduated or progressive rate. So over 2 million, it's less, and over 3 million, it's less. So there's some negotiation room, especially like we understand how much that adds up to. So you probably could negotiate, and they know they're not going to be doing much work. Like, they're going to rebalance like what, a couple times a year or once a year. It's not that much. And they understand that. So if you're okay with like giving up the actual cost, I think it's okay.
Oh my gosh, that was such a good and long answer. I met with a financial planner one time, and I was like, I didn't like him. I was like, oh my God, this guy puts the douche in fiduciary. Would Ryan like to come up and read his question? This one's signed, Ryan. Do you want to come read yours? I'm sorry, I'm putting you on the spot.
So context, AI is... We talked about tremendously in the context of how it's going to totally reframe work in the United States and in the world. But I'm curious, people like in this room, the path to learning and implementing FIRE is a journey. How do you think AI will change an individual's journey to FIRE, sort of excluding the work piece of it?
I feel like the people who try to predict this are overestimating their forecasting, their crystal ball abilities. In fact, I just got someone forwarded me an article that they think is really important, and I read it and I thought it was ridiculous. And the premise was AI has changed everything, so FIRE is dead. Like, there's not even any point because, you know, the whole 4% rule was based on the idea of the stocks going up, but now they could go way up or they could just go way down and the world could be destroyed. So we shouldn't even try to plan for early retirement anymore. So if you're not already there, then just quit even trying. That was the premise of this, like, very scholarly, like, smart sounding article. But when you paraphrase it, you realize it's quite dumb. So I feel like that's the same thing in this question. Like, you can certainly get worried about AI. Like, there's lots of interesting things that can, it's exciting because it can be really good or really bad. But the best strategy in my situation of things that are like this that are exciting and mysterious is just like, assume everything's going to be good and keep investing if you're in the investing stage of your life, or if you're in the already retired stage of your life like me, just keep enjoying your life. And it's most likely going to be the same as the previous 200 years of like lots of economic surprises. But the real thing is like AI is a tool, right? It's a amplifier of productivity. And all of our wealth in the past has come from amplified productivity. So that's why I view it optimistically. It's just like makes humanity way more productive and presumably is going to do a bunch of smart work for us. And for itself, but it's still going to create wealth and products and knowledge. So that's really like probably the best thing that could happen rather than anything really bad.
Thanks for taking that, Pete. I was fumbling with the microphone, so I was slightly distracted. But it gave me time to think. And Bob did a presentation earlier. One of the questions was around, I think, sort of finance meetings and how he manages some expenses and budget and tracking and such. And he has software that can do it. He could dial up like a graph, and it's all done automatically. Bob, like us, we have manual spreadsheets that we update anyway because we want to like waste our time and see the numbers. And we do that every month and we like it. And I think there's a bunch of people nodding. We have spreadsheets, even though we're managing our software and portfolios elsewhere. So I think you're right. Like, the implementation of FIRE is a journey, and those super nerdy people are still going to do the, like, they're going to write it in a notebook and like do it by hand. So I think that'll still exist.
The next one is signed as well. Kunta, do you want to read yours or?
So my name is Kunta. So my question is about Roth 401k. So recently I heard there's a new rule that if you do a catch up, you have to put in the Roth 401k My question is there any benefit of putting money in Roth 401k if you already have Roth IRA, for example? I'm also reading the Sean Mulaney's book, and he mentioned about these tactics that I don't really completely understand. It's like contributing to after tax in the 401k and then immediately convert to Roth 401k and then make the tax-free growth. And then he mentioned that this is a loophole that IRS actually recognized that because there's a notice 214-54. So I guess my question is, what is really the value of doing this?
I didn't read the book, so I'm one of the worst people to answer. But my hunch is that is too deep and we don't know. You're an accountant though, Rox, right?
As one of the great financial minds of our time, I say,
That's one aspect of FI stuff that's interesting is that you can totally get into tax optimizing and like it'll get you there a little faster if you enjoy it. But you also do not have to do that. Partly because the U.S. has such low taxes anyway that you don't really have to optimize. Like I went through life very naive, other than just putting the maximum into the 401k. That's the only I've ever thought about income taxes. So now I have a whole bunch in 401k that is just kind of there. And then I'm continuing to live off all the money that I saved outside of the 401k because the limits were too low. So I just saved the rest in there. And like I was relatively clueless about taxes. And it didn't matter because I still end up with too much money. So I think you can win either way. But I do wish we had an expert that could just be like, this is the answer. But at least for those of us who are like not motivated to optimize taxes, like you can be reassured that you don't have to.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. That is a tough one. That's an advanced one, especially like that book goes into great detail. So we just don't know.
Yeah,
thank you for
highly recommended to read that book and books like it if you're interested though. And because you can definitely make a few extra $1,000 a year by getting better at your taxes.
So the next question, how did your FI number and definition of wealth change after reaching FI? What surprised you?
Yeah. Well, and I think, for me, it kind of partially goes back to the debate with my wife and I, where I was like, I think we hit FI. And she was like, I don't know yet. So we kept earning for a few more years. And then it was like very clear. So I guess my definition just like maybe went further out, or it proved to be irrelevant that like we hit some number, we have more, like the market returns have been great. So like we have more now. So it maybe wasn't such a big deal. And luckily at some point I was like, it's fine if we have a little bit more money, if she works for a few more years, like eventually she'll realize that, it's probably fine. So, and then the definition of wealth, I really don't think too much about it, but I guess if pressed, you see some of the, stories, I don't read too many articles, but you see headlines where it's just like, if you have a certain net worth or income, like you're wealthy. And at some point I was like, I guess we're wealthy. Like we have crossed that threshold, even if we don't really feel like it. And it seems like we're just doing the same stuff that we always did anyway for decades. So it didn't really change much.
Does our recent retiree have any thoughts on this?
I mean, I'm surprised I'm wealthy. My big life goal was to just be middle class, and I just overshot that by so much. Wow. So I guess the entire thing surprised me. I know.
So there's a question, what's wealthy and what's middle class? So basically, there's some definition, I can't remember. It's just like if you earn X amount per year, or if you have, are you familiar with roughly?
Yeah, I've used like the percent of net worth, like top 10% of net worth is what I've used. Like, and you can look at those statistics. Mm-hmm. They publish them every so often on.
Yep.
By age as well.
The numbers haven't changed for me. Like I always thought it's pretty easy to have enough to meet my needs because my needs are pretty modest. But the part that surprised me is how long life is, which I really enjoy. Like I've been retired for 25 years and it's just like really, like you just go through so many adventures and phases of life. And I think being retired helps life to feel longer because it reduces the routine and it creates more of a series of like new phases and new experiences. So I feel like I'm hundreds of years old, and I may look like that too, but it's worth it. And yet I still have several centuries of life to yet enjoy. So so that's the surprising part. It's like early retirement turns you into a vampire, basically, just like endless life and freedom.
I love that so much. It's like, yeah, I agree with that so much. And people are like, oh, life is short. I'm like, have you been married? have you hung out with my mom? Like, it seems very long to me. Okay. Oh, well, this is fun. Would you consider running for the mayor of Longmont?
You should.
Well, I was like, I think it's directed at you.
Or, what I don't even live in Longmont. But.
Yeah. Yeah, since you moved away. What about you, Rox?
Oh, no. Well, I mean, I'm pretty good at bossing people around. That's mm-hmm. important, right? For mayorship, mayoring.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that sounds like a whole lot of work. Yeah, I would not
Agreed.
Do that.
Yeah.
Agreed.
The work part is what made me not be interested. But for a while, I did think it would be fun to try to get work through the city council and try to become the mayor just because it sounds cool. But then when I started going to city council meetings and seeing what they actually do, and plus they do it at 6 o'clock p.m., which is like the last time I would want to be out of my house. That's dinner time, right? Like retired people, we treasure our meals and our family time. I'm not going to do that even if you make me mayor.
City council meetings make you remember that life is very long. Yeah. Extremely long.
Yes.
What's something almost no one in the FIRE community talks about that deserves a lot more attention?
I'm sure this shifted over time. Like, Pete, when did you start blogging?
Now I know the answer. 2011. I got this wrong at trivia night.
So 2011, and like broadly, like what were like you and the other bloggers talking about in 2011? I'm getting around to like what shifted, you know, like the conversation has moved dramatically over 15 years.
I think it just got more broad because there's so many FIRE people out there now, like people with blogs and podcasts and everything, YouTubers. So everything gets shared, all the messages, all the perspectives. And my selfish belief is that there should be more talk about environmentalism and maybe consuming less, because that was the whole reason I started writing. It was like a trick to fool rich people into consuming less by offering them the carrot of like freedom and early retirement. But what has turned out to, and this is like also why I'm kind of anti the parts of Fat FIRE, because people are like, wow, we got so much money. We can be on a constant cruise and like just fly all over the place and just eat as, you know, like just do everything to the max. And it's totally fine. Like it's free country, free world. I can't control people. But to me, I was like, oh, it's unexpected side effects of the opposite of what I was trying to create myself.
Yeah. I selfishly have an answer too. I think that we should talk more about art. Creating art. I think that it's such a good source of like meaning and purpose, and it can be such like a good social thing to do. So I'm big into that. Mm-hmm.
Do you want to talk about what you and JD are working on?
Yeah, I'm putting together a free FI group for people who are creating art and just want to appreciate other people's art. One of my Camp FI talks was about creating art, and so I interviewed him and put this together so that I just enjoyed so much collecting the examples for that. Like, I was like, oh, I didn't know Boris carves wood and like has this adorable dog wood carving. That's amazing. Cool. So I can give you the link for it if you guys want to sign up. But just to share and appreciate each other's art more, because we're doing a lot. I mean, people do music. Like, I can put jokes on there probably.
Jokes are art.
Jokes are art.
Especially yours.
Yeah. Yeah, and for me, I think a lot of us are... We take a lot of pride in our productivity, and we were really good in our careers, and we just got a lot done. And some people are like, I'm just productive. So I think that one of the things that's missing is like a discussion of like idleness and anti-productivity. Carl and I were working on a book about laziness, and we've been working on it for like a few years, and we just... And unfortunately, it did not come together. We actually wrote like 100 pages. So like, some people are like, is it just a bit? No, we have like 100 pages, but it never came around. Although the thing is, I still have some good ideas. So I've been thinking about changing the scope. So I'm thinking about doing just a pamphlet, just something very small, and concise is better. So I think there is something missing about just slowing down. We don't have to keep doing so much and being so productive. It's okay if it looks lazy on the outside and you're resting and sleeping more. And like, we worked hard for a lot of years, so it may take a few years to just chill the fuck out a little bit.
Yeah.
Really, really putting the pro in procrastinate.
Yeah.
Doesn't that kind of bother you once you've mastered laziness or at least stillness? When people ask, like, so what are your plans for tomorrow? Or what did you do today? Like, when I'm on a phone conversation and someone asks me that, it's just like, well, same thing I usually do. And it's like, I feel very uninspired. I feel like a boring person when I tell the story of what I did today, but it was a great day in real life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Yeah. I encourage everyone to just do a little bit less.
Okay. So our last one, what is your favorite vegetable joke?
We'll leave this one to you.
Well, I don't know. It's been a little difficult for me talking about vegetables since I'm divorced. I've been single for a while, so I mean, I'd like eggplants, but at this point I'd settle for a kind zucchini. And my apologies to the children in the room for that.
All right. That is the last question. Thanks, everyone. And yep, so we'll be hanging out over there. Like, we didn't mention it, but we'd have a bunch of produce in the other room. So we're just going to go over there and
I'll be right over.
Yeah, dump some melons or something like that. All right. Where can people find you, Pete?
On the Mile High Five podcast. Woo!
All right. Yeah, yeah. And you recently joined on as a co-host, yeah. Official co-host.
Official. So official.
Yep. Yep. And Rox, how about you? Where are you at?
I'm Finance Rox, R-O-X, all over the internet. Yeah, all the places.
Okay, yeah, we'll link up to that stuff. Thanks, everyone, for watching the show, and we'll go hang out in a few minutes. Thanks for listening to the show. That was the Mile High Five podcast, and I'm Doug Cunnington. If you dig the show, please do three things for us. Number one, tell a friend, a family member, an enemy about the show. We really don't care who you tell. Maybe forward them a specific show that you know that they will like. It's the single most helpful thing that you can do to spread the word. It's like giving us a virtual high five, and actually we don't give high fives in person, so the virtual kind's pretty good. And more importantly, your friend or family member or even your enemy will appreciate the fact that you were thinking of them. Number two, make sure you're following or subscribed on your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, whatever you're using, and that way you won't miss a show. And number three, please leave us a rating and review. We read them on the show occasionally, and you might hear yours out there on an upcoming episode. Quick disclaimer, this show is not financial or legal advice. I'd actually be surprised if it sounded like it. It's really just for entertainment, and that's at least what we're hoping for. But seriously, get advice from professionals. So we'll catch y'all next week. What's your name and where are you from?
I'm Hunter and I'm from Alabama.
Alabama? All right. How old are you?
7.
All right. What's your question? You forgot.
All right, Hunter.
All right, what's your name and where are you from?
My name is Violet and I'm from Alabama.
Welcome to the show. What's your question?
I forgot.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's fun doing a live show. You never know what's going to happen. You have to roll with it. Okay.
I wonder if any of these written questions are, I forgot my question.